underneath the concrete jungle of Kalamazoo. Anarchy on the airway.
The People's Power Hour on 89.1 WIDR.
Now, he's a spoiled brat. Tried the nice guy who replaced him cooperating with the president.
Eric, can you introduce us to William Blum?
William Blum is an author. He left the State Department in 1967, abandoning his aspiration of becoming a foreign service officer because of his opposition to what the United States was doing in Vietnam. He then became one of the founders and editors of the Washington Free Press, the first alternative newspaper in the capital. Mr. Blum has been a freelance journalist in the United States, Europe, and South America.
Hello,
William. Can you hear us?
No, I haven't. The past minute, I didn't hear you at all.
Okay. Oh, that's all right. We're just doing an introduction about you right here, and we're just talking about your work with the Washington Free Press, and I think that's good enough. So thanks for being on the air with us today, William.
Okay. I'll go ahead with our first question here. A lot of your work deals with an aspect of American imperialism, an agency called the National Endowment for Democracy. And could you just discuss that a little bit so our listeners might know about the NED, what it does, when it was founded, who pays for it, and what they've been doing lately?
The NED was founded in the early 1980s because of all the scandals of the 70s which had plagued the CIA. And they wanted to get rid of the stigma of covert operations, but by doing the same things overseas, but doing them in a somewhat overt manner, and hopefully thus remove the stigma of dirty tricks, as they were called, or covert operations. So, and NED for the past 23 years or so has been doing many of the things which the CIA did in its heyday, only doing it somewhat overtly, but they have been destabilizing governments all over the world and interfering in union activity to favor unions which were would support American policies and oust leftist unions, and they've been interfering in elections in country after country. Most recently, in the past few years, they have interfered in Venezuela and in
Haiti recently, correct?
Yeah, in the past few years, and in El Salvador and Nicaragua. They interfere in these elections, that they support those parties which are felt to be pro-U.S. foreign policy and pro-globalization, and they work against those parties which are felt to be not sympathetic enough to globalization and to foreign investment.
I see. So the NED now, this is still funded by Congress, is that correct?
Yes, it's almost every penny comes from Congress. And so it's really fallacious to call themselves, as they do, a non-governmental organization. They are, in every important sense, a government organization. But because they have this appearance of being non-government, they can go into all kinds of activities overseas without arousing suspicion as much as they would if they came in as a clearly government agency. And of course, even much more suspicion would they have if they came in as a CIA. So it's worked out very well for the people who had this brainchild to create this new organization. It's worked out very well from their point of view.
And of course, the NED, there's no oversight committees or activities in Congress or anything, even though Congress is funding them. Is that correct?
I don't know if there's a specific committee to oversee them, but There must be something. A few years ago, NED came very close to being defunded. They were on the verge of not existing anymore. But then the conservatives saw the danger and they rallied and they saved NED, and now it's getting its full funding and it's very healthy. And I think the danger to them has passed.
I see. Would you say the Democrats and Republicans are equally enthusiastic about using the NED as a tool of foreign policy?
As a what?
As a tool of foreign policy?
Yeah, generally. I don't know offhand any of any comments made by Democrats in recent years questioning the agenda of NED. When it comes to foreign policy in general, I must say that I find almost nothing at all to distinguish the Democrats from the Republicans.
Right, right. We are speaking with William Blum, author of Killing Hope, Rogue State, and recently Freeing the World to Death. Is that Freeing the World to Death?
Yes.
Okay, and a memoir, West Bloc Dissident. His website, for those interested, is www.killinghope.org. Bill, I've got another question for you. In the wake of September 11th, it seems like many nations sincerely offered to assist the U.S. in its stated desire to crack down on international terrorism. One of these countries actually was Cuba. Can you tell us what became of that? With the Cuban
side? No, I know Cuba made an offer a few years ago, or they pledged to do their part in the war against terrorism. But of course, I believe they were ignored by Washington. Washington wouldn't be caught dead accepting any favors from Cuba or making Cuba look good, which they would be afraid of doing if they accepted the offer. So I think, as far as I know, that offer was just ignored, and it's dead in the water.
Now, what was the story then with the Cuban Five? You've written about the Cuban political prisoners in the United States.
There were actually 10 Cubans who came to the U.S. Because of all the terrorist attacks on Cuba, which were launched from the U.S. They came to Florida to investigate the Cuban exile groups, hopefully to get some advance warning of certain attacks against Cuba. And so they went to meetings of the Cuban exile groups, and but that was not spying. These were public meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, to make a long story short, they were arrested by the U.S. government and charged with espionage, and even though their whole motivation was to fight terrorism, and they were sentenced to very long times in prison. I mean, five of them pleaded guilty, of course, they to avoid a really harsher penalty.
Right.
And the other five went to trial and were found guilty, and I think three of the five were sentenced to life in prison. Imagine that. I mean, they hadn't done any harm to anybody on the face of the earth, and they're sentenced to life in prison because of fighting terrorism. One was charged with murder because a few years earlier, the Cubans had shot down some planes which had taken off from the U.S. With hostile intentions towards Cuba, and they were warned to go back, warned again and again, and they didn't go back, and they were chased by Cuban planes, and two of the planes were shot down, and the U.S. Calls that murder, of course, and the five Cubans that we're speaking about, one of them had performed some function for the Cuban government in regard to these planes. I think he just told them that none of the five of them would be in these planes, and that they were charged with murder. Even though the Cubans knew all they needed to know without any help from these guys in Florida, they were charged with murder. And all five of them charged with espionage. It's a complicated story. I've written a long article about it. It's on my website. But they're in prison now. They've been there for the past 7 years or so. Their families are from Cuba, are not allowed to visit them. I mean, can you imagine that? If that would happen in Cuba, if they would not allow any family visits to the so-called dissidents who they've arrested, you wouldn't hear the end of it in the American media.
Right.
But there's not a word I've seen in the American media about the blocking of visits from family.
Bill, I wanted to ask you another question that we've not heard a lot about. Negroponte, it seems likely to be our next Director of National Intelligence. You've talked a lot about the war in Nicaragua. Can you tell us about Negroponte's possible involvement in that war?
Well, he was the ambassador to Honduras for a few years in the 1980s while the Contra War was taking place against Nicaragua, and the Contras were using Honduras as their base of operations. It was vital to them. They could not have undertaken this war against the Sandinista government of Nicaragua without their base in Honduras, and that was a vital function for them. And at the same time, Hondurans who were opposed to the government allowing the Contras to use their country as a base, and also they were opposed to violations of human rights by the government, any such protesters were dealt with very harshly. Torture was very common, and Negroponte was fully aware of all these goings on, and he said not a word. His influence in the country was very high. He could easily have made changes if he had spoken up. He just accepted all this as part of the package of support for the Contras, and it's his lack of action and speaking out that has been held against him.
And we are speaking with William Blum, the author of a number of books here on the People's Power Hour. If you have a question for him, you can email us at peoplespowerhour@postmark.net. William, in your book, Rogue State, A Guide to America's Only Superpower, one of your chapters is Why Do Terrorists Keep Picking on the United States? Noted academic Ward Churchill has been castigated for this kind of talk as of late. Why, in your opinion, is the United States continually picked on by terrorists?
Well, that's a very important subject and question, and we were told from the day after 9/11 until now that these terrorists, they hate our freedom, our democracy, our secular government, our way of life, our wealth, our everything about us in our culture and in our music. And this is all nonsense. Poll after poll in the Middle East shows that what people don't like about the U.S. is its foreign policy. It's what it does to the world. And these same polls show simultaneously that these people who hate our foreign policy, they admire our culture. They love our movies and our music. So this whole propaganda about why they hate us, which comes from the White House, is just nonsense. It's our foreign policy which has to be changed if we're going to do away with anti-American terrorism. And I go into a long explanation of this in one chapter. It's very well documented. But even more so in my newest book, Freeing the World to Death, my chapter on the same subject is much more extensive. It's easy to show. I mean, the facts in the case just hit you in the eyes. The official policy of the Bush administration about why they hate us, it's very easy to knock down, because it has no body to it, and yet I'm sure the average American still believes that excuse.
In your book, Killing Hope, too, you have a little quote here from Vietnam, actually, and it says, in the early days of fighting in Vietnam, a Viet Cong officer said to his American prisoner, "You are our heroes after the war. We read American books and saw American films," and had a common phrase in those days was, "To be as rich and as wise as an American, what happened?"
Yeah, that's the opening section of the book, yeah. What is your question?
Just supporting that fact there with, you know, this has not just happened in Iraq and the Middle East, too, in Vietnam and other places. These other countries actually liked and looked up to our culture.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you take Vietnam, Ho Chi Minh, who was our declared official enemy, he was a great admirer of all things American. The Vietnamese Declaration of Independence is modeled on the American version. It begins with, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal." And that's in the Vietnamese Declaration of Independence, or the Constitution, one or the other. And these are the people that we were all told were just our bitter enemies and dangerous to American security and had to be done away with. It's what we do to the world and what we've been doing for decades and decades. All the bombings and the invasions and the occupations and the torture, the overthrowing of governments, the suppression of popular movements, all of this in country after country has just built up a full bank account of animosity on the part of the world, and that's all we need to know to explain anti-American terrorism.
Okay, we're going to take a short break really quickly. We're speaking with William Blum, author of, among other books, Killing Hope. His website is www.killinghope.org. We'll be right back with him after a break. And we're back with William Blum, author of, among other books, Rogue State and Killing Hope. His website is www.killinghope.org. William, I had another question. In Appendix 3 of your book, Killing Hope, you have quite an interesting list of known U.S. government assassination plots against other leaders. Amongst them is, in 1960, an attempt on General Qasem of Iraq. And I've heard that Saddam Hussein was actually somehow involved in that action. Is that true?
No, well, the Ba'ath Party, of which Hussein was a member, made their own attempt upon Qasem. It was independent of the attempt on his life by the U.S. So it was not the same attempt at assassination.
Oh, okay. So he survived a couple before they...
Yeah, before they succeeded, yeah.
Okay. And I was also interested to see on there, of all people, President Charles de Gaulle of France. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, that's a long story, and one has to read my chapter on that. I couldn't do it justice.
Okay.
But to explain the reason for it, would be, this was at the time of Algeria. De Gaulle was in favor of giving Algeria its independence from France. And the U.S. or the CIA was afraid that this would result in the proverbial commie takeover of Algeria, you see. And so that's why they were opposed to de Gaulle's policy. That was the reason for wishing him out of the way.
I see. I think a lot of people would probably be not too surprised to hear about so many of these interventions in the Third World, but one of the interesting things about your work is you also document pretty well a number of covert interventions in countries that we would think are our allies in Western Europe and Australia. Is it fair to assume that there are really no countries of the world that are off limits to U.S. intervention?
Oh, right. There's nothing that's off limits to anything we do. I mean, you know, often I hear people say that our bombing of Iraq or Afghanistan is racist. We wouldn't do that to them if they were not Muslim or dark. And then I have to remind them that in 1999, the U.S. undertook a major bombing campaign, 78 days and nights in a row, of Yugoslavia, which is white and Christian. And so when it comes to our foreign policy, we're not racist. We don't care about the color or the religion. We are opposed to anybody who is not in line with our foreign policy needs, and that's important to keep that in mind. You know, our leaders, our so-called leaders, they have their eyes fixed very clearly on their agenda, and they're not swerved from that agenda by such petty things as color or race or religion.
I see. Another question. You've written an awful lot about the Lockerbie bombing, the Pan Am 103 bombing, and is it fair to say that you don't believe the official story that's been put out in the media?
Right. I believe the story which was put out by the U.S. government and the U.K. government, and which they swore by for years, was that the bombing was the work of Iran financing Palestinians with help from Syria. That was the official policy, and it was repeated again and again and sworn to until it came time to invade Iraq, and the U.S. needed allies in the Middle East for that, like Syria and Iran. So they dropped this whole explanation of who was behind 103, and suddenly the bad guy became Libya, and it's been Libya ever since. But it was not based on facts. It was based on political need.
Okay, and I think this is going to be our final question. In your writing, often we see a pretty grim picture of U.S. foreign policy. Is there no positive aspect to U.S. foreign policy? I think that might be what somebody in the opposition might think. Well, maybe these things are true, but we've done a lot of good in the world. Or is what you see pretty consistent? Is that the only way that it is?
Well, if the U.S. government does anything of a political nature which can be termed beneficial to foreign people, it's only because by pure chance the needs of U.S. foreign policy coincide with this act of goodness, and that almost never happens anyhow. One of the main problem I encounter with people amongst my readers and people who hear me speaking in person, the main obstacle I have to reaching those people is they have this deep-seated belief that the U.S. government means well. No matter how horrible their policies may look, no matter how much suffering they may cause, these Americans are totally convinced that it's a mistake. If bad things happen, it's a mistake. It wasn't meant. That the hearts of our leaders are in the right place. And as long as they cling to that belief, it's very difficult for someone like myself to reach them politically with other ideas. So I try to work on that basic belief of theirs before I go too much further.
Okay, great. We've been speaking to William Blum, the author of Killing Hope, amongst other titles. His website, for those that are interested in finding out more about him, is www.killinghope.org.
William, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.